This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff Luhnow fired as the lead executive of the Astros, and A.J. Hinch, their manager, axed as well yesterday by their owner, Jim Crane. This is after Major League Baseball suspended those two guys for 1 year, took away first and second round draft picks, and fined the Astros $5 million. We're asking you if the major punishments levied against Houston was enough from the National Football League. 800-636-1067 is the number. Real quick on Alex Cora, the manager of the Boston Red Sox. I believe he'll be suspended for a year. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the suspension ultimately will be about a year, but they'll add something else. There'll be something else to it, whether he gets fined or something else. I think he's going to end up with the stiffest punishment here.
The other thing that I think needs to happen is the new manager of the Mets is Carlos Beltran. Now, like most of you, I have not actually seen the report that baseball put together, but the reporting being done on that document is that Beltran was one of the main players implicated. And in fact, to my knowledge, I haven't heard of any other names. Have you?
It's the only player implicated.
So there's no naming of Bregman, Altuve, Correa,
right.
None of those guys.
Right.
Yuli Gurriel.
And it's very convenient because he's no longer playing.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So it's
but he is managing. He's got a lot to lose.
Yeah.
So, he just got a job.
Because what they didn't want to do here.
He could get in big trouble.
And I think he will. What they didn't want to do here was they didn't want to cross that bridge of putting the players in it. Because the players are benefiting from it. They're orchestrating it. They're doing it.
Good luck putting that toothpaste back in the tube. I would say maybe he gets like an 81-game suspension.
Because when I say players, I mean, I'm talking about current players now on the roster.
Yeah.
They don't want to start suspending guys for that. Because I think that's one of those CBA things they probably couldn't get away with just because there's no precedent for this. So I think that's the threshold they didn't want to cross. A lot of columnists and people that I respect who think and talk about the game an awful lot were saying that was the bridge too far. That's what they couldn't do, was to start getting, suspending guys like Altuve and Bregman and company for how many games? What do you do? 15, 30? You suspend them like it's PEDs because you're gaining an unfair advantage. What do you do there? They just didn't touch those guys. So it was convenient that, it's a former player. We're going to go after him. He's now doing something else. They can go after managers. They can go after GMs and executives. The players they didn't want to touch.
Would you suspend Beltran? You got to do something, man.
If he's the orchestrator, then yeah.
If he's the ringleader among the players, which is what we're being led to believe. And now, as a leader of that clubhouse, he's benefited enough to get an almost immediate managerial job.
Get him a year.
You got to do something with him. Tony's in Long Island on the Fan. What's up, Tony?
Tony.
Hey, guys. Guys, listen. Beltran is managing the Mets. That's his punishment. Let's move on from him. First and foremost, I think it's disgusting with the Astros, top down. The fact that Jim Crane tried to come off this better than holy and he was clean, that's a load of garbage, okay? I mean, the general manager came out and declined. He said he didn't do anything wrong. The owner's coming out clean as a whistle. They're a disgrace, okay? They are the worst that American sports represents. No one took blame except A.J. Hinch. What a disgrace. Well, what I would have done is take away their international signing money. You couldn't sign Caribbean kids for 2 years.
Yep.
You know, that would have been a real punishment. You know, taking away first and second round picks, I'm not so sure that's going to affect them. Let's see if, they start spending more on Caribbean kids. But I'm really unhappy with this, and it's a disgrace. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you, buddy. Strong as always. Like it. Thank you. Hinch's statement was great. Hinch is a first-class dude. I know this is a weird time to say that.
One of my good buddies played college ball with him. And during the series, when they were in town, Hinch was like, yeah, swing on by the hotel. And they had coffee and just caught up about life for 30 minutes.
I'm telling you, he's
a great guy.
I don't know anyone before all this with bad words to say about A.J. Hinch.
Mm-hmm.
He is beloved. That's all I can say. His statement was perfect. I don't know who wrote his statement and who wrote Luno's statement, but Luno should have used the same person.
Luno, fire your PR guy, hire Hinch's.
Hinch's statement, I'm not going to read the whole thing, it's lengthy, but he says, I appreciate Commissioner Manfred's unwavering commitment to uphold the best interests of baseball. I regret being connected to these events. I'm disappointed in our club's actions within this timeline, except the commissioner's decision. As a leader and major league manager, it is my responsibility to lead players and staff with integrity that represents the game in the best way possible. While the evidence consistently showed I didn't endorse or participate in the sign-stealing practices, I failed to stop them, and I am deeply sorry. I was actually told, CK, who saw this report somewhere, you know, he damaged twice the actual screen that they were using to cheat. Like, Hinch a couple times broke the screen.
Yep.
And then they would replace it and keep doing it. He would go on to apologize to Crane for negative reflections and the team and Houston and all those things. But if anything, he did more than anybody else probably. He didn't do enough. He could have stopped it. He could have come out somehow, some way, and ended it. Multiple times, though, despite being adamantly against it behind the scenes, he legitimately damaged the screen they were using so that they didn't keep doing it. But I guess at some point he just decided, A, they're winning, and B, I'm tired of butting my head against this. I'm not making him a victim here. I am saying it seems like he did more than Luno.
Yeah.
It seems like he did more than anybody else.
If you're putting columns together, the guy that's, you know, least defensive at all this to me is AJ Hinch.
And he's out of baseball, probably never gets another job again, and is disgraced forever. Now, a lot of people will say good riddance, but I'm just putting all the beans in the piles here, and you can add them up however you want to. Scott in Manassas, what's up?
Gentlemen, happy Nicky Backstrom Day.
Day.
So, first of all, I don't think it's harsh enough. My first question for you guys, had they beaten the Nationals and 2.5 months later this comes out that they cheated in 17, you would assume they did it in 19, would you still feel the same? And then I also think the long-reaching ripple effects are going to go on forever. Does Altuve win the MVP? Did pitchers lose bonus money because their stats weren't proper? I mean, it just goes on and on and on, where I think it's going to be a long-lasting effect that we'll never understand truly what happened.
So I agree with all that, Scott. I just don't think you can kind of re-legislate now. Like, I'm supposed to go back, and that pitcher who gave up the homer to Altuve, I'm going to change his ERA. I mean, I can't do that.
Point of the pitcher that came forward to the Athletic.
Right.
He was like, you know, it's for a veteran, it's not a big deal, but for some young kid trying to establish himself and he gives up, you know, 8 earned runs and 3 1/3 to the Astros, you may never hear from him again.
Yeah. Well, to his direct question, the best way I can answer it, if they beat the Nationals in the World Series in Game 7 or Game 6, and we knew they were cheating when they did it, would I be annoyed by that? Yes. Would it make me furious? Unequivocally. Would I hate the Astros forever? Absolutely. None of these opinions I'm giving you, though, would change because I don't think you vacate championships. You're not getting the rings back from these guys. I like the idea the one guy said you can't market your title. You can't have the
banners
and stuff.
Outside the box idea, yeah.
I'd never heard that. I kind of dig that, to be honest, more than other stuff. But it does not make me feel like the Nats won the World Series. I still watch the World Series and watch them lose.
Yeah.
Then forever I'd have to sit here and say, well, DC teams have won 2 championships.
Wait a minute, it's 3.
Wait, it's actually 1 and that Nationals won, .. I'm not playing that. You win or you don't. Mm. If they didn't win, they didn't win. Now, if the Astros cheated and beat them, that sucks. But they cheated and they beat you. So it just wouldn't change anything for me necessarily, other than how much I despise that the Astros did it. I already don't like that they did it. I'd have more vitriol and anger if they beat the Astros beat the Nationals that way. But while Dodgers fans should feel that way about the 2017 World Series, I'm sure they were doing things to get an advantage. It wasn't good enough against the Nats. And here is what I would need to know. Before I go stronger than I have today and say everyone should be banned forever and let's get rid of fill-in-the-blank player and fill-in-the-blank coach, I need to know for sure that no other teams are doing this. And I just don't believe that.
Mm.
Maybe the Astros go further
leaders
and have, quote-unquote, mastered it, and they lead the league in this, I have a really hard time believing this is a one-off. I just don't believe that. Do all these people who want these things think that? Maybe they do. Dave in Manassas, how are you?
Hey, boys, love the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you, buddy.
I think, first of all, I think, yes, the MLB had to drop the hammer. I applaud them for that. But if Jeff Luno, however you say the guy's name, the general manager, first of all, if he says something like he said, he better damn sure be sure he wasn't involved. But I'll ask you guys this question. If you guys were accused of something that you didn't do and you knew you didn't do it, wouldn't you speak up and say, hey, I had no involvement? Now, I'm not saying he did or didn't. What I'm saying, if he's clean, I mean, why not say I'm clean? I mean, I don't know. And lastly, I think there should be an asterisk at least by their titles. Add that to the mix of punishment, so to speak. What say you guys? I'll shut up and listen.
Thank you, buddy.
I'm not really an asterisk guy.
Yeah,
because
are symbolic at best.
Yeah,
that doesn't
happened
change
or
anything.
It didn't. You know, the home run record has an asterisk. You know who the home run champ is? Barry Bonds, because he hit more than anyone else.
Major League Baseball allowed him to play. I'm not retroactively legislating
now,
whether he was eligible or not.
Some people tell you he cheated, he used steroids, he's not the champ. Cool. You can pretend like they didn't happen. I saw it with my own eyes.
So let me clarify this
it.
Real quick. People were like, you know, why do you care about this and not steroids? Guys that were on steroids still struck out. There was, in other words, it helped you play better. Nobody's saying that performance-enhancing drugs didn't, whether it was greenies, whether it was uppers, whether it's, you know, whatever roids or human growth hormone that you did, whatever recovery thing you did.
But also,
of course, it helps you
play.
You're
not saying to take away the MVP award from Jose Altuve, just like you're not. You would still put these guys in the Hall of Fame who did this and benefited from
it.
Right.
My point is, there is no greater advantage you can gain through on-field means than this. Knowing what pitch is coming is everything. It's everything. It changes the entire game. You could not know what pitch is coming, be yoked all out of your mind, and still swing and miss. You're not swinging and missing anywhere near as often when you know what is coming. It's the greatest advantage ever gained by cheating in the history of this sport.
You got an answer key. Grant and Danny on the Fan next. The three biggest things we learned watching the NFL playoffs this weekend as we move on to the championship round.
It's great, Danny, for our friends at Window Nation. Hindsight's 2020. Stop looking back and start the new decade the right way with the resolution of savings event from Window Nation. Here's what's gonna happen for you, okay? You're going to save thousands off brand-new energy-efficient Window Nation windows. Here's your offer. Call today. You buy one window, you get one for free. Plus, you buy now, you pay later with no down payment, no payments, and 0% financing until 2021.
Window Nation's gift to you this new year. Do not worry about the cold weather. Window Nation's expert installers are going room to room, and they'll set you up for years to come. Window Nation's professionals have installed 150,000-plus windows in the last year, 99.5% of the time, requiring no follow-up service. On top of that, Window Nation's going to pay your heating bill until your new windows are installed with a house of windows. So start 2020 off a whole lot warmer with Window Nation's resolution of savings. It's a big event. Buy one window, get one free, any style. No limit, plus no down payment, no payments, no interest until 2021, and no gas bill. You can keep your cash in your wallet.
You got nothing to lose and nothing to pay for more than a year. Call 866-90-NATION. That's 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Final four set in the NFL conference championship games this weekend. AFC title game, maybe the two hottest teams, NFC playoff game to be played for the conference championship. Two best teams all season long in the NFC. Titans, Chiefs, Sunday kickoff at 3:05. Packers, 49ers, Sunday afternoon, your nightcap at 6:40 deep into the evening. I like the 1 and the 4, the 12 and the 3 grid better. 3 and 6, you wait so long, and then by the time the games end, it's time to go to bed.
It's a weird time.
I'd rather games afternoon and have a little bit of a night, maybe do some dinner or something afterwards, but beggars can't be choosers. The three biggest thing we learned in the NFL playoffs this past weekend. Give me your number one item.
It can go wrong, and you can recover if you've got an amazing quarterback. It can go badly. You can be down 10, you can be down 12, you can have weird things, your team cannot be playing well. You can come back if you've got a QB that's in one of those modes. MVP caliber, top 5 caliber, Hall of Fame caliber, whatever you want to call it. When you've got that ace in the hole, you ain't out of it. That's what I learned. Because you saw it over the course of this postseason. You know, honestly, the Texans shouldn't have been there. The Buffalo Bills should have been playing the Kansas City Chiefs. Deshaun Watson did it. Well, Pat Mahomes said, Deshaun, that was awesome what you did in round one. I'm going to spot you 24. Watch this. I'll put up 51 points in about three quarters. Check me out. You're not out of it if you've got a superstar at quarterback.
Similarly, number one on my list, Patrick Mahomes is the best player remaining. May well be the best player in the league anyway. MVP a year ago. Lamar Jackson surpassing him as the game's most electrifying talent this year. Mahomes banged up for part of the season. But Pat Mahomes is the best player remaining in these playoffs. And in a lot of sports, we talk about who's got the best player, that's the team to put your money on. Who's got the best athlete? That's the team that's probably going to win. Patrick Mahomes is the best of the rest. Everybody left standing, he's the guy. I don't know that that means the Chiefs are going to win. This is not the NBA. This isn't really the NHL when you got five guys on the ice at a time. It's a different ballgame. But you just talked about the fact that the Chiefs were not dead in the water when it was 24-0 because they've got that guy. How do you slow down this offense? How do you stop them? There are plenty of quarterbacks with these weapons, with this scheme, who'd be really good, but they wouldn't be Pat Mahomes. Look at Alex Smith. Alex Smith had a bunch of these weapons and this offensive design, and that was a beatable team. Mahomes is more athletic. He's more mobile. He extends plays. He runs better than Alex Smith did at the end of his time in Kansas City. He's got a better arm. He's more accurate. He does everything almost perfectly. This is the quarterback you design in a lab. That's my number one takeaway. Number two, I don't think Derrick Henry is going to be stopped this postseason. I don't see a team shutting him down. I'll pick the Chiefs this weekend, I think. That's my early lean. But it's not going to be because Derrick Henry doesn't go ham sandwich. He'll put up great numbers even if they lose. See the New England game when they won 14-13. That could have easily, if the Patriots had any offense, been a 20-14 New England win while Derrick Henry rushed for almost 200. Points do not come from the running game. They come from where? The passing game. We know this much. So the Titans can be beaten even if he rushes for like 191, but it's just hard to do it. I mean, you got to make them earn everything. He's got almost 400 yards in two games. He's got two rushing touchdowns, I think, so far in these playoffs. Might even be one, but I think it's two. Point being, he's not going to be stopped. You're not going to hold him to 85 or 57 yards or something like that. You just got to make sure they don't beat you with big plays.
Mm-hmm.
Let him gash it 5-6 at a time, go 13 plays, and make sure that they got to go on these long drives where a penalty, a holding, or something sets them behind the sticks.
Yeah, get your holding penalty, back them to third and 15. Yeah,
that's what New England did. You don't let Ryan Tannehill do anything down the field. That 45-yard
touchdown. Sounds crazy to say, by the way, right? Is the scouting report?
Yeah.
You can't let Tannehill beat you,
That throw to the corner to Jonnu Smith? Nope. Yeah. All that stuff goes away, and all of a sudden you're left with like 14 points and a lot of rushing yards. That's how you beat this team. Or you jump out early and beat them in a shootout, which Kansas City might be capable of. But there is no way the Chiefs stop Derrick Henry. Nobody's going to stop that guy. That's number two.
If your defense is truly, and I'm talking about truly elite, you'll probably keep playing in this season. Now, I know the Patriots just lost, who you're talking about here. The team I'm referencing, the San Francisco 49ers. This is a complete and total defense. This defense is excellent. They lead the league in yards allowed per pass attempt, net yards per pass attempt. They blitz among the fewest teams in the league and still generate as much pressure as anybody. They are good in the middle. They are good up front. They're good in the back. Everything about them is really good, and they make it really hard on you. You might get them a couple times. Seattle moved the ball on them a few different times because Russell Wilson pulled some magic from his tuchus. But if you've got a defense like this, you're probably going to a conference title game. You go back in recent history, teams that are hyper-efficient against the pass and still pressure the passer, whether it's the Broncos defense with Peyton Manning that won the whole thing, Seahawks defense that actually destroyed Manning the year before. You go to the Carolina Panthers defense that got red hot, the two Giants teams, etc. This Niners team is like that. No one's talking about them in that way, and they should be. That defense is incredible. Number three, you already touched on him. I got to begrudgingly move Derrick Henry out of my into star pile. I hate doing that because I was wrong about him. I generally watch guys like that and go, no thank you, no interest. Bring me seven scat backs instead. That guy's a star. He's incredible. If he's got momentum, he's getting at least 7 or 8 yards.
So good.
He's amazing.
I don't need to spend much time on number three because you just hit on it. 49ers defense, best remaining, and so great. Pass rush, the truth. That defense can win them a Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo and that running game are going to help. You know, they can make plays in the passing game, but it's that defense that carries them, and it's that pass rush that's going to harass quarterbacks. I wouldn't want to be Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes or Tannehill after that because they are nasty. A leftovers, Aaron Rodgers is not done yet. Don't count him out. And Russell Wilson off script, fun to watch.
Agree with both.
Some of the things you learned this weekend in the NFL. Our buddy Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports is next. Want to figure out from him, is there even a 0.0001% chance the Bengals don't take Joe Burrow?
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Is there any possibility the Bengals don't go Burrow at one? You're listening to Grant and Danny. It If you missed any part of today's show to this point, you can go to radio.com. It's a great app. I listen to shows all over the country all the time. Actually, with all these coaching hirings, I've been catching all the press conferences of all these coaches when they've been introduced. So today, Kevin Stefanski was introduced as the Browns head coach, in fact, in the last hour. So this afternoon, I'll go back and I'll just rewind with the radio.com app, the midday show in Cleveland, and listen live to that press conference. But you can use the rewind function. You can use radio.com to go back and catch any of the interviews you missed, like the fun discussion we're about to have with our buddy Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports. Ryan, is there even a 0.0001% chance the Bengals don't take Joe Burrow and he falls to number two?
No, they're taking Joe Burrow, and they can actually start negotiating now, which is a good thing. I just can't envision a situation where they would even answer phone calls from other teams. Joe Burrow's been that amazing this year, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, a year ago this time, there was no one was saying, hey, is Joe Burrow going to come out to the draft? Everyone's like, well, he's coming back for his senior season because he's just a guy, and he obviously turned things around. And this, look, if you're going to win two football games, this is the year to do it, because it just seems like he is so incredibly special. And we'll see what happens when he gets to Cincinnati and has to deal with all the things that go along with playing on the Bengals. But, look, they have a chance to be a decent team next year, 6-7 wins maybe, and then sort of turn things around from there. But it starts with having a quarterback. Joe Burrow was the best player on the field. Joe Burrow was the best player in college football this year. And Chase Young is second, but I think it's a distant second.
Best quarterback prospect since, fill in that blank for me. And then the second part of this would be, he and Trevor Lawrence are both draft eligible this year. Who goes one?
Best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, and he actually reminds me a lot of Andrew Luck, Joe Burrow does. They move in similar ways. They neither have rocket arms. They are actually surprisingly athletic, and they are just nails when the game's on the line. The only difference is, of course, Andrew Luck had a longer history of playing at a high level because Joe Burrow transferred from Ohio State. We know that story. But I see a lot of Andrew Luck in him, and I think he could be that type of player, and knock on wood, he can stay healthy, unlike Andrew Luck, who had to retire before last season. And it's funny, Danny, you mentioned the Trevor Lawrence-Joe Burrow comparisons, because last month I actually was asking people that question. My answer the last month, and it hasn't changed, is Joe Burrow. Trevor Lawrence looks like Thor, and you know he played at such a high level last year. But he struggled a little bit towards the earlier part of season two here, his sophomore year. And he certainly got hot towards the end, and he's going to be the number one pick next year unless Joe Burrow 2.0 comes along, and we don't know who that is yet. But I just think if you're starting the franchise tomorrow, given how Joe Burrow has played and the confidence with which he plays and the throws he's willing to make time after time after time, I'm taking Joe Burrow. I would understand someone going with Trevor Lawrence just because of the physical tools, but I think Joe Burrow has proven without a doubt how incredible he can be, even when things aren't going great around him. He can elevate everyone else's play, and that's something that Trevor Lawrence couldn't do last night.
Yeah, before the season, it wasn't bottom out for Burrow. It was tank for Tua. Nobody even – it wasn't on the radar, and he turned himself into as can't-miss as you can find. At Ryan Wilson, CBS, for our guest here, joining us here on Grant and Danny. Ryan, let's go to the postseason games here this weekend. We just kind of kicked this around between Grant and I. Give me a big takeaway from this past weekend. Everybody loves to do the grandiose statement about football through their own lens, whether it's about running the ball or passing the ball or something else. But what was your big takeaway here from this past weekend?
I'm so impressed with what the Titans have been able to do, because historically you think about Tennessee Titans football and you sort of just nod off because it's been pretty boring time and time again. And this year, after they benched Mariota and turned to Tannehill, no one saw this coming. He just played like an MVP candidate the last month and a half, 2 months of the season. And, of course, once they got to the playoffs, it was Derrick Henry time. And we're sort of taking a step back in terms of having a team lean on the running game. And these last two playoff games, it's like watching a high school team with one player who happens to be the best running back in the state just dragging the other team up and down the field, even though the other team is the defending state champions. And that's what we've seen, and there have been no answers for Derrick Henry. And I think a lot of that goes to Mike Vrabel, and that's something else I've been impressed with these last 2 weeks, is how he does not care. He went to New England, and he did not care. He wasn't overwhelmed by the moment. We know he's played in New England for many years, won Super Bowls with Bill Belichick, and he convinced his team of exactly that. And then they went into Baltimore and did the exact same thing. And they actually beat the Ravens worse than they beat the Patriots. And look, the Patriots offense, we know, wasn't great this year. But no one saw what happened in Baltimore, expected that to happen. Lamar Jackson
didn't look like himself at all. He looked like it was the playoff game last year, and the Titans just continue to ball out. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Tannehill has to throw the ball a little more. We know he can do it based on the last 2 months of work, but right now, Derrick Henry, Vrabel, and just sort of how that team has come together has been an amazing story and sort of put the Titans on the NFL map again.
I've said for several weeks I don't know how anyone's going to pass protect against San Francisco's front. Green Bay is the best pass protecting offensive line in the league, according to the Next Gen stats this year. So maybe they can hold up. They got destroyed by the 49ers the first time they played. How much of a chance do you give them?
I'm hesitating, Grant, because if you talk to the folks in the analytics community, they hate Aaron Rodgers. I don't hate Aaron Rodgers. He's not playing like he did 4 or 5 years ago, and I think everyone could agree with that. He's 36. But here's the thing. Even though he hasn't played at a high level week in and week out, if you said, okay, which quarterback do you think is going to show up in San Francisco and throw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns, and would you be shocked if that answer is Aaron Rodgers? You go, no, I could totally see that happening. So I think you're onto something. I think the offensive line, if they hold up just a little bit, Aaron Rodgers can do damage. And my concern last week with the 49ers was, okay, can Jimmy G handle the moment? Because we don't know if he can. He played okay in a couple nationally televised games during the regular season, but this is different. He seemed fine. He didn't seem concerned at all. And I think the biggest thing in his favor is Kyle Shanahan's dialing up those plays and putting him in position to have success. And the second biggest thing, as you mentioned, is that defense just balling out play after play. And I think the Packers have a lot of work to do to make this to have some success there. You mentioned the blowout a month and a half ago, I think. And then the front four in San Francisco is going to crush you. They don't need to blitz. The linebackers, Quan Alexander's back, Fred Warner's there. They are legit. The secondary starts with Richard Sherman, who was the highest graded cornerback at 32 years old, according to Pro Football Focus, than anyone else. And he continues to play that level. So the Packers have to play a flawless game. I don't think they can do it. But again, maybe Aaron Rodgers goes for 505.
Let's get into Garoppolo real quick, who you just touched on. You have a potential of superstar Hall of Famer, Aaron Rodgers in the Super Bowl, superstar potential Hall of Famer in Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl. You also have a Tannehill-Garoppolo potential in any combination they're in. What is Garoppolo? I mean, listen, he's at the helm of this unbelievable team right now with an incredible defense, as good a running game as you'll find in the sport. What if he switched places with somebody that was in charge of a mediocre club? How good would he be? I have a tough time getting a read on him.
No, that's a great question, Danny, because last week I was actually talking about this. Okay, if you switch Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins on those teams when they played, what's the outcome? Well, Kirk Cousins is going to win with that 49ers team. Garoppolo isn't going to magically save the Vikings from themselves, given how they played. And if you put Garoppolo on the Seahawks are probably a 4-win team, and that speaks more to how important Russell Wilson is to what they do than Garoppolo. I think he's replacement level at this point. He's an average quarterback who has a chance to get better. He's a year removed from that ACL injury that saw him miss most of the 2018 season. He makes some dumb mistakes. He makes some really good plays, but consistently he's not a guy that I would rely on like I rely on Russ Wilson or even Deshaun Watson in Houston, where he has to do a lot. So I think he's in a great situation in San Francisco, but again, put him on that Minnesota team, and he's sitting at home with the rest of us this week.
Pat Mahomes took over, down 24-0. I don't know if this is something you paid any attention to, Ryan, and I don't do the bad body language takes, you know, the Colin Cowherd kind of deal, but I will tell you, I noticed the very positive body language of Pat Mahomes. When they were down, watching him on the sideline, I was fairly confident because he never was frustrated. He never even seemed fazed. You would have thought they were up 10-0 when they were down 24-0. He just looked like he wanted to get back out on the field and he knew they were going to win.
No, I noticed that too, Grant, and that's a great point. And this is what I was thinking when it was 24-14. I said, this game is over. This is a wrap. The Titans, the Texans shouldn't have kicked that field goal, hindsight and all that, and they should have tried to step on the Chiefs next when they had the chance. 24-14, that was a wrap, and they actually were winning by halftime, which blows my mind, and I think a lot of that has to do with Andy Reid not panicking, and also, as you point out, Patrick Mahomes imploring his guys on the sidelines that don't worry about it, I got it, and he was telling the truth. He had to battle through 5 or 6 drops, never got upset, never dropped his head, never started pointing fingers, and just did what he's done all year. And I think perhaps one of the most amazing things, in addition to his leadership, he ran for 57 yards, I think. He looked more like Deshaun Watson than Deshaun Watson did, and he can find ways to beat you that you sort of didn't really think about. And I don't know how you can come back from that loss if you're the Texans. You really can't do anything but laugh. But it was amazing to watch. You turn the game on the second half, you're like, oh, this is what we expected. But the first 15 minutes were some of the most incredible football we've seen.
Ryan, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy the week and the games this weekend.
Thank you, guys.
See you, buddy.
You got it. You heard what he said. You heard it here first. He said there's a 100% chance Joe Burrow does not go number one and could go number two.
It's happening. It's all happening.
He didn't actually
say
that.
That's not what he said.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get you ready for the Tuesday night ahead next on G&D. We were talking earlier about XFL rosters. Chad Johnson. Or is he Chad Ochocinco still?
Do I still have to do that other thing, or can I just say Chad Johnson?
Or is he back to Chad Johnson?
I don't know.
I don't know what his legal last name is now. The guy who used to wear 85 for the Bengals. That guy?
Good receiver.
Trying out in the XFL as a kicker.
Didn't he kick an extra point in a preseason game?
A couple of times. I think he kicked in a real game, too. He kicked some extra points for the Bengals. But he's trying to make it as a kicker in the XFL. That's kind of a cool storyline. I'll be watching that, monitoring it closely.
Can I give you the stat that I teased to you during a commercial break earlier that I thought would put your mind in a bottle? It would bottle your mind?
Yeah, I want to hear that stat.
Joe Burrow TD passes in 2019, 60. 60. Okay, so I guess you added more for the championship game?
Yeah, he's up to 65.
Well, let's just say, just bear with me this. On the 2019 season, 60. The LSU Tigers combined touchdown passes from 2015 through 2018. That's year 15, 16, 17, 18. Four seasons, 59.
That's pretty funny.
Joe Burrow defeated the previous four quarterbacks 60 to 59.
That's
in the regular season in terms of touchdowns.
Their offense was so bad.
Gives you an idea of how terrible it was and how starved they were for a quarterback. And then they found one, and then they just rolled to a title.
All right, let me give you some numbers.
Give me a number.
How many points a game is James Harden averaging, do you think?
32.
37.
Is it that high?
0.7.
Oh.
No other players averaging 30.
It's a bit awkward. Was it four?
Giannis, 29.8.
Yeah, I was going to say Giannis is about 30.
Luka, 29.1.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only guys averaging over
37?
29. 37.7. Big night tonight. He's up to 38 per game.
Yeah.
James Harden.
Yeah.
One of the greatest scorers ever. Also at a time, obviously, where it's probably easier to score than ever. So, a couple of things. I want to talk a little more Joe Burrow before this day ends. Because we didn't get to do it, really, in the back half of the show. I love Joe Burrow. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For some reason, though, it's like you're not allowed to like quarterbacks because your football team drafted one last year. Like, when I watch Joe Burrow and I enjoy watching him, I do covet him. I do wish he was on my team. But it's okay to watch Russell Wilson and say, wow, he's amazing. I wish I had Russell Wilson.
Well, there's an implication.
To watch Aaron Rodgers and say, what a Hall of Fame stud he is. The notion that every positive comment you make about a quarterback is anti-Dwayne Haskins, we need to do away with this. We need to stop having a chip on our shoulder. Dwayne Haskins is the starting quarterback of the Redskins next year. Dwayne Haskins played a good final two games. It's going into the offseason with momentum. He will get a chance in 2020 under Scott Turner and Ron Rivera to prove himself as the long-term answer, the starter with the Washington Redskins. Nobody's trying to take Dwayne Haskins' job away from him. But for me to have a car, okay, I have a car.
Yes.
Pretty good car. I like my car a lot.
I like your car, yeah. It's a good car.
If another car that I thought was one of the coolest cars on the planet became available, I would want to just be interested in seeing how much does that car cost? What's it like to own that car? The idea that you can't be enamored with someone. I think Dwayne Haskins has a chance to be a good NFL quarterback. I really do. I was super worried about him halfway through this season. I'm less worried now. I'm certainly not sold, though. By no means, are you sold on Dwayne Haskins?
Sold it. I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful too.
But sold is a big statement.
I had way less hope on Dwayne Haskins before the last couple of games. I'm more hopeful now.
Yeah, I like him a lot and think he has a chance to be really good. That's.
Let's say this. 1% you think he's going to be a bust. 100% he is going to be a several-time Pro Bowler and wins a couple Super Bowls. Like, how sold are you on Dwayne Haskins?
Sold. Yeah, that's hard. Because mostly it's my Redskins corollary, just being in the way, bad organizations get in the way. So I'd say, it's hard to be a star. I'd say it's 40%, 35, 40% that it could be really good.
And you're a mark, which that's a low number.
Yeah.
Considering you're a mark. I say all this just to say, I really like Joe Burrow. It's not a threat to Dwayne Haskins. Everyone just relax. Settle down. Now, I did spend some time texting you last night, Danny, about what I what I would offer as a trade. But I guess my point is this. It's not like I don't like Haskins. I just, my opinion, maybe I'll be wrong. 3 years from now, come back and fire me as your GM. I think Joe Burrow has a chance to be special. I think he is going to be elite. I think he has a chance to be one of the next great quarterbacks in the league. So if I had a chance to trade up and get him, like if I'm giving up Haskins and the number two pick and my third rounder and a second rounder next year or something, like that's something you debate doing because I think Joe Burrow is Andrew Luck. I think he's the next great thing.
And do you have an employee that's going to call the Bengals back after they hang up on you?
Well,
when that's
no,
your offer?
Probably not. But my point
yeah,
is,
I get your point,
I'll
yeah.
throw Trent Williams into the deal. Like, I'll make a trade, but it doesn't mean like everyone's like, why don't you like Haskins? That's not it. I think Haskins could be good. Joe Burrow is different. To me, if you rank all the quarterbacks of the last 5 years that have come out in the draft, I would put Burrow first. Now, you could tell me I'm wrong, and maybe I am. Maybe I've fallen for this guy, and I'm hoodwinked by an amazing system that they've got right now. That's all possible. But I'm just telling you, this is the guy. In the same way that the Eagles fell for Carson Wentz and Dan Snyder fell for Robert Griffin, I am falling for Joe Burrow.
Yeah, here's the analogy I would draw. I love my car. I do. I got a Ford Fusion.
I just used this analogy.
I love it. But here's what I'm saying. If you start dangling a Ferrari in front of me, I can't covet it.
So you're using the exact same analogy I used 2 minutes ago.
I'm saying even more precisely.
Okay.
I can't covet it. I have no intentions of going to buy my Ferrari. I'm not going to spend that money on a Ferrari. I'm not going to do that. It's outrageous. There's no possibility of me ever owning one. Okay? Doesn't mean I can't have fun.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just taking it a step further and making it concrete.
And my sincere hope is 5 years from now, Dwayne Haskins is a stud, and he's better than Joe Burrow. That would be great for business. That'd be great for me as a lifelong Redskins fan. But the idea that because you drafted a guy at 15 who at best had mixed results last year and did finally play better and make some progress and have two good games, and I am now hopeful. I am certainly prideful about giving him an opportunity and that the Redskins are going to stick with him. I like that they're giving him the shot. Let's see what he could do. But because you drafted him, you can't possibly think that Joe Burrow, who you think is going to be great, wouldn't look good in burgundy gold. Settle down. When did the rookie 15th overall pick who's played a half season and thrown as many as touchdowns become above reproach? Nobody's threatening his job. He's going to be the starter here. Joe Burrow's going to be a Bengal. Relax.
Hey, Grant, I don't think you're really explaining it enough, clearly yeah. enough. Let me put it to you this way. I have a Chevy Equinox, and Dwayne Haskins
is
like a Chevy Equinox. But if someone showed up with like a Mustang or a Ferrari, I would at least want to take a look at that Ferrari.
That's a good bit.
I suppose.
You don't love it.
Not at all. I'm trying to help you, and I'll just remind you, that's the last time I do that. So enjoy. I hope you get a lot of hate mail.
Okay.
Grant Paulson hates Dwayne Haskins, everybody. He got blocked by him on Twitter. Let's bring that up some
okay.
more.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I also own a Chevy Equinox.
Yeah.
Give me a more specific example, Dar. What do you got?
Let's say, Grant, you went and got dessert somewhere, and you had a really great bowl of gelato in front of you.
Yeah.
But someone offered you a Food Lion chocolate ice cream with ice chips on it.
Oh, I love ice chips.
You would take it.
I might take it. Just good examples all around the room, don't you think, Danny?
Isn't it time for us to go? And we have to leave.
It's close to it. Why are you so upset?
It's really annoying. I'm trying to help you out. Really annoying.
Everybody's having fun here.
Three people are.
What about Danny? He's not having any fun?
Three people are having a great time.
Like, we both have good cars.
I
you know,
it.
Like,
I
like our cars
I
are good.
That. Appreciate that.
If you missed any part of today's show, the radio.com app and the rewind function available for you.
Rewind the segment.
4 days. I'm Grant saying so long. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Tom and Dar.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.